Okay, so you're talking about ancient texts. What kind of ancient texts? Do you know the names of them? Have you seen them? Are they at all out in the public domain?
Yes and no. And I'm trying to now remember the specifics because there's so much mythology that, in fact, as you begin to get into it, looks more like mangled history.
Mm-hmm.
We do know, for instance, that Himmler set up a whole section of the SS to do nothing but go around the world and steal all the good stuff, all the ancient stuff.
Right.
In fact, I was so anticipating when Spielberg came out with the film, Raiders of the Lost Ark, that he was going to really blow the doors off and show us that the Ark and all the stuff the Nazis were intrigued with was not something out of the Old Testament. It was, in fact, ancient technology buried on this planet, accessible from previous epochs of civilization, some of whom could have built spaceships and gone to Mars and done the stuff we see there.
But
that's not the direction he went.
Okay, but you're saying that's true.
Well, I'm saying it's possible.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying it's possible.
Okay.
And remember, a lot of this has to do with perception. You know, there's an old cliche that politics is 99% perception. It doesn't matter if something is true. If politically people perceive it to be true and then act upon that belief, that can make it true.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that these two groups who have access to secret information, ancient texts, the Nazis and the Masons, that they believed that there once was a civilization on Mars, for whatever reason. And they went there when they controlled the space program looking for that evidence. And bingo, they found it. That 21st century, as of 20th century then, confirmation then validates the hints and rumors and intimations in those ancient texts.
Sure.
So but the text was
are you positing that the Nazis had a space program?
No. They wanted to. They were building toward it.
Okay.
I'm looking now very seriously into the possibilities for that kind of technology that early on. What I find is a very interesting pattern as we get deeper and deeper into the whole Nazi era, who they were, what they believed, where they came from, their lineal roots, which goes back much further, it looks like, hundreds of years, than the brief flurry just after World War I leading up to World War II. The Nazi philosophy, the idea that human beings are not from this planet, that there's this special race of Aryans, I mean Aryans, Aries, Mars, duh, that may in fact be grounded in some ancient documents which have been super secret, kept and revered, deified almost, is not beyond reality. I just don't happen to have copies with me this afternoon. I'd love to see some.
Okay, are you in touch with scholars, for example, specializing in that area?
Absolutely. In fact, one of them is a really cool guy that you guys should interview. His name is Joseph Farrell.
Okay.
He is in South Dakota. He will be here in January. He's coming here so we can have he's an Oxford scholar. He's an Oxford PhD.
Mm-hmm.
He's written 5 books on this subject. He meticulously footnotes, documents, tracks, references, unearths amazing memos and a paper trail. And he has given me, as a serious scholar, who also was a pretty nice guy, an amazing new window on the antecedents for the Nazis that the U.S. government brought over, buried in the core of our own space program, who seem to have had their own agenda, apart from Eisenhower, Kennedy, and the American people.
Okay, so you say, what do you say, Werner Braun, von Braun?
Mm-hmm.
You say...
Kurt Debus.
I'm sorry?
Kurt Debus.
Okay.
Who seems to have been somehow involved in efforts to create an amazingly interesting alternative rocket technology that's not rocket-based for space travel.
Free energy-based?
Field propulsion.
Torsion-based?
Field propulsion,
okay.
Which is a way of manipulating space-time. So on the one hand, you get anti-gravity. On the other hand, you get free energy.
Okay, so when was he operating?
Kurt Debus?
Yeah.
From Paperclip through the entire Apollo program.
So this is the end of the World War II.
World War II. Through the 50s, into the 60s, into the 70s, and he was made the head of Cape Canaveral / Cape Kennedy after Kennedy was assassinated, And he has this entire secret background that never once has come out in any official document from NASA or any other place.
Now, how do you know about him?
Because of Joseph Farrell and his stunning research. Okay. He's got German documents. He reads German. That helps. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got real scholarship. We have always been, those of us looking at this cutting edge of the transition between fake history and real history, we've always been limited by the fact that there have been basically a field of amateurs. Some of them are talented amateurs, some of them are idiot amateurs. I have a phrase which, of course, has been made true over and over again, amateurs can get you killed. But people like Farrell are not amateurs. Mm-hmm. And when they have turned their expertise in scholarship, trained at a place like Oxford, on this problem, you wind up with five amazing books that document, page after page after page, a real hidden history. The alternatives to what the Nazis were doing technologically and politically, and how they almost seamlessly continued by going from one set of sponsors, i.e. Hitler et al.,
right,
to another set of sponsors, i.e. the U.S. government et al., without even a break for lunch.
Okay.
And in the book, we have this stunning picture of von Braun and all these paperclip scientists standing under a kind of a cute Western motif. It's a sign hung on spindles up above the assembled scientists. And it's a UFO. It's an actual cutout in the shape of an unidentified flying object / saucer craft.
Okay.
And in the middle of it, there's this big swastika.
Oh,
this is in the United States of America after we won the war.
Right.
And these guys are on shore leave away from White Sands into El Paso. This was a curio shop. It's called Bob's Curio Shop. And the photographs and enlargements are in the book. And, of course, the reason that the swastika on it is so stunningly important, as we describe in rather great detail in the book, is because the swastika was a symbol that Hitler stole from history, going all the way back to the Vedas, this ancient Indian tradition that talks about spacecraft and nuclear weapons and vimanas and all kinds of astonishing high-tech stuff back at a time when there should be no such high-tech stuff. And what Hitler did was to take it, co-opt it, and use it for his own political and propaganda purposes very consciously, because what the swastika is an insight into an entire different level of reality, which I term hyperdimensional physics, out of which you get, on the one hand, if you really do it right, anti-gravity, making rockets obsolete, and then free energy, making centralized power plants and centralized power and the control of people through the price of oil also obsolete. So on both hands, you've got under proven now Nazi research and development efforts during and after World War II, you've got the keys to liberating civilization all over this planet, 6 billion people freed, and someone is sitting on that truth, and it's one of those three groups running NASA secretly, the Nazis.
The Nazis' line or lineage continued on to this day, is what you're saying.
Yes, even now,
and
as we
speak. Have descendants running NASA?
Sure.
Okay. Is that a... Okay.
I don't know who they are.
You don't?
Because when the old guard died, or retired and then died, they didn't say, and this guy coming in to fill my place, he's also a card-carrying party member of the Nazi National Socialist Party. So what you have is a philosophy that doesn't identify itself. They've gotten more sophisticated. They realized after the debacle of World War II that maybe people really weren't going to take to that kind of overt. So what we've had now in this country, and you just look around, you have the creeping fascism. You have the Nazi philosophy in every bedroom, under every roof, in every public communique. You have people trying to look into the camera and tell us with a straight face, it is constitutional to read all our emails, to listen to all our phone calls, to tap our telephones, to eavesdrop, to have the cable guy come in and look around to see if you're doing anything suspicious. This is right out of Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
And it's not confined, unfortunately, to NASA.
Okay, so when you talk about the Nazis running the space program, you're talking about back then, after World War II, you got the V-2 rocket, from what I understand. So that's a group, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got the atomic bomb that they're creating, or they're taking the technology out of Germany and...
Well, we have been living under the historical record that the United States, through the Manhattan Project, overwhelming crash program, developed the atomic bomb. And that Japan and Germany are two major antagonists in World War II. Although they had little small efforts, they were going down the wrong path, they didn't have enough money, they didn't have the right guys. It basically was no competition to the big United States, which put all this money, $2 billion in 1940s money, which now would translate to maybe $2 trillion of you know, 21st century money. And we created the atomic bomb and used it twice in anger against, you know, Japan to end the war. According to Farrell, that may not be exactly what happened. There appears to be, from the documents, a much more sophisticated, much more advanced, maybe even functional atomic research program in Germany, which at least created and detonated one atomic weapon in test. And in his books, he cites where and when and who was involved in all that. And yes, it looks like that knowledge was brought over after the war. It didn't help us during the war, but it was brought over and amalgamated. And in part, we actually may have taken some of the uranium to be used in one of the atomic bombs from German sources. There's a story about a U-boat that was bringing, you know, enriched uranium, and we got to it, and it was headed originally for Japan. And I mean, this is an extraordinarily new, interesting insight into how World War II was, you know, produced and progressed and prosecuted. And it may not be, ultimately, when the end of the day arrives, it may not be that the history that we've been reading for the last 50 years is the actual history that everybody really lived.
Okay, but you have a group that's also dealing with free energy or these craft that the Nazis were also developing.
Maybe.
So in addition
maybe.
To the...
You always have to caution this with maybe.
Okay.
There are people who say yes, there are people who say no. It mm-hmm. really ultimately, science depends on the experiments and the documents. Farrell has unearthed some documents, but even those documents, when it comes to the actual technologies that they were involved in, these really cutting-edge technologies, are very ambiguous. They can be interpreted in several ways. Now, I think in part it's because the good stuff has not been released yet, or it hasn't even been found yet.
Right.
There are mysterious deaths associated with some of this documentation. For instance, toward the end of the war, Patton died suddenly and mysteriously. Apparently he was heading a group, the 6th Army, that was actually headed for the border between Czechoslovakia and somewhere else to find in mines these buried documents from these secret black ops Nazi high-tech projects. So until you get the documentation, it's all rumor. And remember...
So is the idea maybe he found the documents and then was killed?
Or he didn't find them and he was killed because he was looking and he wasn't going to give up. We don't know.
And he... Okay.
Yeah, and you have to go to Farrell's work to see that entire story.
Okay.
And here I am promoting another author's work, which I really want to do because Joseph Farrell is a stunningly important scholar who I have the pleasure of knowing and as I said, we're going to be meeting here.
Maybe we'll come back and do an interview with both of you.
That would be useful, I think.
Okay.
Very useful.
So, but what I'm wondering now is, so we've got these three groups. You've talked about the Nazis.
We only talked about two groups. We only talked about two so far.
Right, but that's where I'm going.
Yeah.
Is what I want to know.
We haven't really talked about the Masons yet.
Well, not a whole lot. No, not at all, really. So, take us to the Masons and the Magicians, and how do they work into NASA, along with the Nazis?
Well, the Masons, of course, founded the United States.
Okay.
I mean, Masonic tradition of philosophy is a stunningly important adjunct to the advancement and evolution of the human species. To, you know, the old army phrase, be all that you can be. Masons are not bad guys. Masons are good guys.
Are we talking about Freemasons?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They are the heirs apparent of the Templars, you know, from the Middle Ages, who became very powerful by finding something in Jerusalem, you know, under the Temple Mount. They became the most powerful organization in Europe. They literally, you know, own Europe, in essence. They created a free banking system. They created so many modern institutions that we would recognize, you know, when you go to your ATM. And then Philip the Fair, the King of France, in 1307, on a Friday the 13th, lowered the boom and killed a lot of them, imprisoned most of them, chased some of them, and never found a lot of the important stuff that they were keeping secret, including an awful lot of money. An awful lot of money. And the rumors have been that the money was stashed up at a place called Oak Island, and that's why FDR and other Masons periodically have funded or gotten private funding to go and try to dig it up. And that's a whole other story for a whole other video.
Sure. What about the magicians?
The fact is that the Masons were the good guys. Now, when you are, I mean, James Webb, who was Kennedy's administrator of NASA, handpicked, was a 33rd degree Mason. Okay. When you read Webb's biography, not his autobiography, which of course would have been written by him, mm-hmm. but a biography written by somebody that was trying to figure out who James Webb really was, what Webb was doing, it's very clear in these pages, was trying to take the best of what NASA was created to do, which was to find out what's out there, to use it as a way to uplift the educational system, both at the high school level and the university level, to infuse cutting-edge new technologies in American industry, which of course create product, which of course elevate the entire economy of the entire middle class. You can look at his program, and it was a mandate to take everything NASA found that he could get his hands on and make it useful for the benefit of the American taxpayer. It's really all there. You just have to read it. What happened is because the two philosophies, the two metaphysical traditions between the Masons and the Nazis are so close. The Nazis were able to come in and take over the Masons almost unknown, seamlessly, secretly, quietly, like a thief in the night, as the phrase goes. And I don't think the Masons ever realized until it was too late that they've been taken over. That the objectives that they were pursuing, which they also were keeping from the public by pronouncing, but they were trying to implement quietly, it's the secrecy that got them in trouble. Because if you try to do things secretly, in secrecy, terrible things can happen. Mm-hmm. Their biggest tactical mistake was not going public with what they found, instead of trying to implement it quietly, sub rosa, to gradually evolve this culture in a direction that it has to go, where aliens is not a dirty word, where we can actually talk about ETs and our ancestry and all the stuff that's out there that they found and not freak people out.
Okay, that who found? The Masons or the Nazis?
NASA. The program itself, the NASA program. Remember, okay. You have a program, you have people in charge of it behind
sure.
the scenes.
But what I wanted to know is, back with the Nazis in Germany, they had this technology that was incredible, and supposedly they might have been back engineering. They had the atomic bomb, you're saying?
No, I said possibly. It's all not known. It's possible.
Okay, they have.
There's a huge difference between possible and real.
And we've got documents that lead in that direction.
They strongly intimate, but they don't prove.
Okay.
Not yet. They don't prove.
But it had to come from somewhere. It didn't come that. Basically, the idea is that there it was ET contact. There was a whole development of a psychic, you know, remote viewing.
Whose idea?
Back in the Nazi era.
Yeah, but from whom?
Good question. I'm asking.
Well, I'm not a Nazi expert. I backed into this through the NASA doorway.
Yeah.
I'm trying to back engineer politically what got us in this mess.
Exactly.
And I'm looking, and we look in Dark Mission at these various paper trails, and they lead back to these shadowy groups, you know, good guys and obviously bad guys.
Right.
But they believe the same thing.
Right.
But remember, there's the dark and the light. You can take the same knowledge, you know, I can take nuclear energy and make a bomb, or I can make a reactor. One lights cities and you know, gives people power and energy, and the other destroys them. So there's always this double-edged sword with any knowledge, You can use it for good or you can use it for evil. The Masons historically tried to use it for good. The Nazis demonstrably use it for evil. It's very, very metaphysical.
Okay. So, but going, if we've got a dark mission, and we've got two space programs, and they all stem back from to Nazi Germany.
Possibly.
Their roots exist there.
Well, that's
the people running
that's
the programs, the heritage going through, the through line is the Nazi through line, right? And the same thing, Nazis and Masons, and we haven't talked about the magicians, but they're all stemming from some kind of belief in extraterrestrial life. Is this not true? Because where you're going is the face on Mars.
Is that where I'm going? I didn't know that's where I was
Isn't
going.
That where we're going?
No.
I mean, in essence, what you're saying is that we have NASA in relatively present day lying to us about the face on Mars with an intention. You don't just lie.
No, it's definitely to cover it up.
Okay. Now,
but
why?
Because the bigger, remember, this is a nested set of lies. The lies are different at every level. The first lie that the good guys in NASA believed was a report that they commissioned themselves, just as Eisenhower was phasing out and Kennedy was coming in 1958, 59, and then the early 60s. This was a report. Remember, NASA itself was only formed 50 years ago, when this is broadcast in 2008, in July of 58. So a half century ago, President Eisenhower says, I can't have all these warring military factions trying to control space. I will create a civilian agency, and it will be the nexus for all space, peaceful space activity. The Defense Department will conduct all military space operations. Well, the first thing we show in Dark Mission is that that's a lie. NASA is not a civilian space agency. It's a military space agency. It was always formed under the fiat and control of the National Security Council, the Department of Defense, any of the intel agencies, all of its data that are not viewed as appropriate for public knowledge or concern can be classified.
And
even
it's not,
from
it's
own people.
And it's not for public knowledge if it has to do with the control of space.
We don't know that. We know under the law, anything that the president or his minions deem classifiable can be classified. They don't have to give a rationale.
Okay, but I'm asking you, what's the rationale for classifying
space
program?
If you have a vanguard agency whose mandate is to boldly go where no one has gone before, and you know, because you've got secret documents that say it's out there, that they're going to run into artifacts, ETs, old libraries, generators, spaceships, God knows what. And you don't want to tell the people that that's what you're really looking for. Then you will create in law an agency which only can let them know what you want them to know and keep all the good stuff secret, which we now prove with the charter itself in Dark Mission is what NASA is.
Okay.
NASA, every time a spokesperson comes on and says, we're a civilian agency, that person probably believes it. Because he hasn't read the charter.
Mm-hmm.
I have people now arguing with me on various conversations on the web. I'm on Graham Hancock's forum in England, and there are people arguing that Hoagland doesn't understand how to read the charter. That only is a metaphor. No, it's not a metaphor, because there are several sections to the Space Act that clearly reaffirm the absolute right of the president to classify any NASA data he does not want to make public. That makes it a military organization. Simple. You can't. Civilians would be independent. They'd be able to publish. Science that I was taught is publish or perish. You find something, you write it up in a paper, you put it out there in the peer-reviewed literature, you let people all, have at it. You then get a consensus that, well, he's right on this and he's wrong on that, and we're going to go get more data, and the process goes on. That's not what NASA is allowed, external to NASA, to do. It has careful, clear prescriptions in the law that it can only release what it is allowed to by the President and the White House and all the various other branches of the executive branch.
Okay, but you're saying their motivation is to hide
the good stuff.
Information about ruins,
yeah.
About that ruins that what, tell our history or the history of other beings out there?
Well, again, it depends on what you would find. If if the name of the game is to keep us suppressed through physics and technology, and you have an economy which consciously is now dependent on oil, the world is controlled through oil, through the dollar. There's a huge fight now going on about the dollar and the euro. That's why we went in and invaded Iraq, because he was going to go to the euro. The Iranians just went to the euro. We've been threatening a nuclear war. Well, gosh, let's put those dots together. It's about political and economic control. So you go out to the moon, or you go to Mars, or, you know, one of the moons of Jupiter, and you find a working alternative energy power plant that's the size of a teacup and can run half a city. Do you want that in the public data stream? Do you want people to realize there's a way to do things without drilling in the Middle East and all the political and economic infrastructure that's been built up? No, I don't think so. And that plan obviously has been in place for the last 40 years. As the oil economy was building, as people could project, you know, people demand energy, they're going to want more stuff, more gadgets, we're going to build them computers someday, they're going to have SUVs, you know, all of the stuff that we take for granted that we sell incessantly on this screen, creating a consumer society that is fueled totally, ultimately, by oil energy. Nuclear energy is a tiny percentage of the oil energy of the world. Would you want to enter into that mix an alternative energy system, technology, which would allow every house to get off the grid, every person to be sovereign suddenly, where they would have unlimited amounts of energy from a thing running in their basement that they never have to look at and touch again for their lifetime, just by flipping a switch that would draw energy out of space, out of another dimension, that would be hyperdimensional? No, not if you're into control, because how do you control people? You keep them dependent on you for the critical resources of life. And energy is a critical resource of life. Try living in your home for 2 days without it. You'll learn very quickly. As Art used to say, you basically have a very expensive box.
You're talking about NASA is covering secrets
because
of technology.
No, I'm saying they could have. They could have. That's one possible rationale. Frankly, I don't think that's the best one.
Okay.
All right. My bet, and again, these are outside bets. I don't have sources telling me this is what's going on. And even if I did, would I believe them? No. I would have to find records and data and evidence to check, to counterpoint what they're telling me. I frankly think it's the religious thing.
Okay, that's a huge leading.
At this point,
now let's
cut.
Okay, yeah.